Welcome to the Seven Hats Podcast. My name is Yuval Selig, and I've been on the entrepreneurial roller coaster for over 20 years. I've experienced it all throughout my journey, the grind, burnout, failure, and ultimately, success. The turning point for me was realizing that building a successful company is meaningless if you neglect the other significant areas of your life. So today, I'm inviting you to join me on an adventure through those seven areas, what I call the seven hats. Every week, my guests and I will drop valuable insights and pearls of wisdom, helping, motivating, and inspiring you to get your seven hats in order and deliver real impact with meaning. So let's get going. Hey there, seven hatters. Today, we're embarking on an exhilarating journey into the world of entrepreneurial innovation with Sam Madani, the co-founder and CEO of Bomani, the company revolutionizing the beverage industry with its espresso martini in a can. In this episode, we're focusing on hats 1, 4, and 7, the soul, the entrepreneur, and the seeker. As we journey through Sam's remarkable story, from his family's escape from Iran to building a disruptive brand in the highly competitive CPG market. Sam's tale is one of resilience, relentless determination, and the profound impact of authentic relationships. We will explore how his upbringing as a first-generation American shaped his entrepreneurial spirit, the hurdles he overcame to bring a novel product to market during a global pandemic, and how he balanced his personal well-being with the demands of leading a fast-growing company. So, if you're intrigued by the makings of a game-changing entrepreneur, or just love a good success story that blends passion with purpose, sit back and let's warmly welcome Sam to the Seven Hats. Sam, welcome to the Seven Hats.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
Well, listen, we've known each other for 4 years now, and I'm genuinely excited to chat with you. From the first time that I met you and your partners at Bomani, I could tell that there was just something special about you. Your heart and soul just really stood out. And that's why you've been so successful in business and in life, and especially in an industry as challenging as CPG. And it's just been so amazing to watch you grow and evolve into the incredible entrepreneur that you are today, with so much wisdom to offer our seven hatters, I believe. But before we dive into that, Sam, if you don't mind, I'd love for you to share some background on the journey that shaped you into who you are today. So we'll start off with, where were you born and how was your childhood like?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for the kind words. Your support along this crazy route of the last couple of years is very, very deeply appreciated. And it's crazy to think about when we first met, we were doing dry demos. Do you remember that during COVID? We couldn't even pour the liquid. We were standing in the stores and we were like, you guys want to check us out? Like, it was a very, very wild time.
And you were crushing.
We were actually doing well. That's true. Very thankful, man. But yeah, by way of background, I'm a first generation born American. Proud to say both of my parents actually fled Iran. They had a really traumatic time leaving. I mean, you know, I think about so often now, you know, they left their home country and moved halfway across the world as teenagers. I think even when we build our business to be a multi-billion dollar business, that still pales in comparison to all of the hardships that my parents went through just to get to this country and create a life for my sister and I to build whatever we wanted, to build something just successful, to really pursue our dreams. It really is textbook American dream, has been my life. And I think so much of that experience shaped me into who I am today. Like, my parents love telling people the story that they say my first business was when I asked them for a ringtone in seventh grade. It was Lollipop by Lil Wayne. And I wanted $5 to buy Lollipop by Lil Wayne. And I remember my parents looking at me and being like, you want $5 so the phone that we bought you sounds different? Like, that's the dumbest thing we've ever heard. So through a combination of like Windows Media Player and iTunes, I figured out a way to make my own ringtones, upload them on a USB, and then sell them at school. And I made a couple $100 when I was 12. I thought I was rich. So since those days, long before I knew what entrepreneurship was, I really knew I caught the bug. I wanted to create stuff that people really wanted. I got really excited knowing that the work that I was putting in was getting someone else really excited. And the idea for Bomani was very much born out of that. You know, I went to USC, studied finance. The idea was learn the financial side of the industry, develop that financial literacy so that I would understand the language of business. And I am very, very thankful that I do have that skill set today. I met who would become my co-founder, Kai, through mutual friends. Honestly, the truth is on a beach in Ibiza. Probably the coolest meeting your future best friend slash co-founder story that's out there. And then we met our third co-founder, Amin, just through mutual friends in New York. What was so interesting was that three of us all realized pretty much out the gate that the other people had skills, had talents that we wanted to learn from, that we aspired to, that we really admired in the other people. So we kind of knew we wanted to start something together. And it was really us having this idea, oh, we're going to start something. We're like, wait, the idea is right in front of us. It's every Friday when we're coming home from work, making a little bit of coffee, making a little bit of caffeine with our cocktails before we go out. Why is no one making this product? Why is no one making espresso martinis in a can? And we would later find out that the supply chain to create our product is an absolute nightmare, like so, so specific. And we're really thankful to be on the right side of some pretty massive barriers to entry. But the idea just came out of our personal need. It was a very organic idea. You know, brought the product to market during COVID, like we were talking about, which is insane. Thankfully, a couple of years after, the world fell in love with espresso martinis. So our timing was just about perfect. And really this year has been the point of inflection where we've just seen that next level growth start happening. But all the time I think about every success that we have, every hurdle that we overcome, all comes back to, you know, me looking back in my own life and saying, okay, my parents fled their home country as teenagers. My co-founder, Amin, is also the child of immigrants, and Kai has gone through a wealth of his own struggles in his life that he's overcome. So I think having those early experiences in life really set us up to be able to build a business that would be successful.
I love that. And we share a lot in common. So my parents immigrated and actually escaped communist Russia back in 72.
Oh, wow. When
my mom was 18. My dad was in his early 20s. And they knew that they wanted a better life for themselves and their family. And as young kids escaping, Russia going to Israel and then dealing with, as soon as my dad got to Israel, there was a war that he had to go to the army for. And my mom was raising me because I was just born in 73. And then still, my dad understood that there's a bigger world out there, that there's more opportunities. And again, uprooted and then went and traveled and immigrated to America when I was 9. So I feel you. I know how it is and the pressure that our parents had to keep food on the table. I mean, I remember my mom was debating whether to buy me shoes or food for the week, right? We just, it was just not enough money back then. And the pressures of our parents to feed, right? Not forget about going out and, and traveling and building and buying homes. It was more of how can we survive? But I think what is driving us, the children of immigrants, is in fact that desire and hunger to continue the legacy of our parents, because they've risked so much. And same thing with my wife, Ala. Her parents, again, immigrated out of Russia to San Francisco. And that's the environment that I know and you know, right? You don't know any other environment. So
completely, yeah.
So kudos to you and that drive that you have. I want to go back to your childhood. So any siblings?
Yes, I have a baby sister and a baby half-sister. So I guess a little sister and a baby half. I say baby sister, she's like 3 years younger than me. So she's not that young. My baby half-sister is like 20 years younger than me. So it's my dad and my stepmom's baby.
Got it. And so are they in the U.S. now? What are they doing? What's the relationship like between you?
Yeah, thankfully everyone is in the U.S. now. I'm actually curious, how many languages do you speak as a sidebar?
I speak none well, but I spoke three. And from speaking three, Russian, Hebrew, and English, I only understand Russian, can't speak it, and I can't even speak or understand Hebrew anymore because I haven't spoken in so many years. And now English, I'm just trying to keep up. So yeah, the thing is about language, you don't realize how quickly you can lose the ability to speak and to understand unless you're consistently being exposed to it. And that was the reason why I still understand Russian is because my wife is from Ukraine and she speaks Russian all the time. So it keeps that muscle strong. But I don't really have any Israeli friends and I don't really speak Hebrew. So that's the reason I can't. But go ahead. Sorry. Hope that answered your question.
No. I was just curious because like it is something that is really important to me to pass down to whenever I do have kids. You know, I told you I just got married back in May, which is really exciting.
Congratulations. But,
you know, thank you. My little sister and I, the one who's 3 years younger than me, Sarah, she's like my best friend. Like she lives 10 minutes away from me. We hang out all the time. Like we talk about everything. She really is like my best friend. We always joke that I'm the most stereotypical older sibling. She's the most stereotypical younger sibling. Whereas like I remember if I would get a B+ on a test, my parents would be like, we did not come from Tehran for B+. Like it was like the funniest. Okay. Then at dinner we're doing, okay, you missed 3 questions on your math quiz. We're going to do those 3 questions, variations of those questions until the sun comes up. Like you better be ready to practice what you got wrong. But my sister and I mean, both my sisters and I, like we all speak Farsi. I mean, I can still read and write Farsi, like because my grandma taught me. One of the things that's really important to me is for this next generation, when my wife and I, when we do have kids, I want to make sure that they speak Farsi. It's not the most useful language in the world, but it is going to hopefully tie them back to their roots. And, you know, I would, because my wife is not Persian. My wife is half Indian, half Irish, culturally was raised very Indian, but she doesn't necessarily speak a lot of Hindi. She understands some Hindi, understands some Punjabi. But the thing that I'm interested in is like, I would be so excited if my grandkids and my great grandkids were, it doesn't matter if they're from Ghana or Bolivian or like Japanese or whatever. Like, I actually think that would be really cool. But I want them to speak Farsi for the sole purpose of knowing how thankful they need to be every day, how much they need to realize that every day is a gift and opportunity. Like, you know, people ask me why I'm so optimistic on life. I'm like, you know, at one point, someone in our supply chain who will remain nameless told us we had a 1% chance of getting to market. And this was a very, very reputable industry source. And I was like, well, 1 in 200 Iranians who tried to escape got out. That's 0.5% chance. So actually 1% is twice as likely as I am to even be in this country. So that's, I think, another reason that I'm just very thankful for everything is that I realize what a gift it is to have these opportunities. And yeah, my little sister is like my best friend. My baby sister is still very, very young, but she's adorable, super smart. She's going to be a very, very much a handful for my dad as she gets older.
I love it. It's funny. You mentioned your parents being very critical in regards to your education, making sure that they didn't waste the immigration on you, right?
Yeah.
What do they want? Are they accepting of you being an entrepreneur or were they initially?
Oh, yeah.
Or did they want you to be a lawyer or a doctor or some other type of profession?
Yeah, my parents are both entrepreneurs. Like my mom especially is like, she loves this stuff. And, you know, I joke that Bomani was about the 1,000th business idea that I pitched her. And one of the most validating people in my life to say, go and do this was when I called my mom and I told her about Bomani. She was like, wait, do this, quit your job, do this.
Next.
Like, I'll support you. And that was the most validating thing. Cause like I said, knowing that they love me and they're critical of me because they love me and they're, you know what they taught me? Cause you asked that question too. If I were to articulate it, it's like, expect greatness of yourself. You know what I mean? Like, it's really empowering to go into something and be like, nah, I can do this. There's no reason I can't do this. There's literally nothing stopping me. If they can come from overseas as teenagers and build a life here, there is no reason I can't do whatever this challenge in front of me is. And I think knowing that, learning that lesson, expect greatness of yourself, really puts you in a position to be successful. Like, I think I'm of the camp that definitely productive people are happy people.
For sure. Growth equals happiness. There's no question about it. And I always marvel at the fact that there's so many individuals out there that are just not high achievers. For whatever reason, they don't have the discipline, they don't have the consistency, they don't have the vision, they don't have the motivation, they don't have any of the skill sets that are so necessary for what it takes to be successful, but yet they're sitting there and complaining about why they're not, right? But those like you and I and others that we know who immigrated have that instilled in them, and that's why immigrants succeed. A lot of folks are like, oh, look at these immigrants. They're all successful. Well, there's a reason why they're successful because they're following a strict equation, a formula to success. There's no miracles, as you know. All right. So
it's really well put. Sorry. I just had one note on that too, that I think is like there's also, in my opinion, this, you know, like when you watch Karate Kid or like one of those movies where there's a montage that's like 90 seconds. And then the main character goes from, I can't even like karate chop properly, to doing like triple backflip kicks in like 90 seconds. Then you go on Instagram and you're scrolling on Instagram. You're like, oh my God, these people haven't made it in the shade. Whereas like the reality of it is like, you just need consistency. You just need to like really put your head down and keep going, build it 1% per day, one brick at a time. I think that's a lot more palatable. And I think that's kind of why a lot of people lose the motivation, is because they fall for that like kind of Karate Kid movie montage trap.
For sure. And I think that actually one more question on your parents.
Yeah.
What you said that they were entrepreneurs. What did they do?
Yeah. So my dad was in the tech space, software enterprising. My mom was in the consumer space, actually. Her company did phenomenally well. I mean, in the hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue where she built it to. And they did everything from like window coverings to garage doors to flooring, and they franchised it, which is really, really smart. Learned a lot of lessons from that too. In fact, it's eerily similar to the alcohol business in that like they were building franchises and they were successful if the people who they were selling the franchises to were successful. And in our business, we're successful if our distributors and our retailers are successful. Giving them that playbook for how to sell this product, how to communicate this product to customers, it's very much the same principles with a different end product, obviously.
I love it. So you had role models, which is awesome. Definitely. Same with me. My dad is a violin maker, and he had to. Yeah, well, violin, cello, and viola. In all my life, all I've seen him working 24/7. I mean, literally what it takes to become successful. And I will never forget what he brought to the table and how he inspired me to become the entrepreneur that I am, and to give me that work ethic and the consistency that I need in order to be an entrepreneur. I remember being interviewed after college because I just wanted to get a job. And I was interviewed at Wall Street with a broker. And the guy looks at me after the interview. He's like, you know what? I want to hire you. He gave me an offer. I didn't take that job, but he's like, I want to give you an offer. And the reason why is because your story about your dad and all of those stories were so compelling. And I know that just by you living in that environment, you're going to be a success.
Right. That's amazing, man. Good for you. And I didn't know your dad was a violin maker. My sister, Sarah, is a violinist.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. I played violin until I was 12, and then it wasn't cool. I couldn't get any girls. So I was like, all right, I'm done.
That's funny.
All right. We talked about rejection with that supply chain guy that told you you're never going to make it. So let's start there, right? You faced plenty of rejections in your journey.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Can you recall a few moments that stand out that are really significant? And how did these moments shape your resilience and your personal growth? Very interested to find out.
Yeah. So I think the very first experience was, because we had built it up so much in our head, was really, really devastating at the end of it. So when we had the idea for Bomani, the agreement was, so basically the origin story was, I was in an Uber with my now co-founder, Kai, and he was like, what are you going to do after investment banking? And I was like, no, I'm seriously thinking about this coffee cocktail business. And he was like, dude, if you're going to do it, do it. And that to me, I was like, oh, okay. Now this is going to be very real. So I put a presentation together, and we call it presentation day, where I presented what would become Bomani to Kai and Amin. And we spent the day hashing out all of the details of what this vision really was. The rule was 2 hours a night after work, we're going to develop this idea. And when we had the vision pretty developed, we were like, all right, we're going to take a weekend and we're going to visit all of these breweries and we're going to see which one of them will make our product. That sounds absolutely insane now, because our product requires extremely specific equipment. But we just thought, hey, if we go to these breweries, maybe they can make our product for us. And we went to breweries all over New York. We were living in New York at the time for the investment banking jobs, even though we knew we wanted a headquarter in California. And we would go to these breweries, and one after another, some of them were cool about it and they were like, we have no idea how to make this. Some of them were like, why the hell do you guys want to do this? This is going to be way too hard. And a couple of them literally laughed at us and were like, get out of my face, man. This is not a serious thing. This is never going to exist. So I remember we got back that night and we stopped at some like deli, picked up some sandwiches. And my now co-founder, Amin, was like, hey, that sucked. And then we grabbed some beers and we're like, all right, the next thing. You know what I mean? So it was a good lesson, and just like, let it roll off your back. Sometimes shit happens, brush that shit off. Let's go figure out the next thing. You know what I mean? You can't really let it sit with you. So we're like, okay, breweries aren't the plan. The lesson was, why are we going to these little breweries who have no interest in making our product? Let's go out there and let's find someone who's excited about making our product, who has the existing equipment, who wants to branch out into the alcohol category. And that's ultimately what we did, and why our supply chain has been really, really solid since then.
So you came, I didn't mention this, but you came from investment banking, which is actually a plus. It's a benefit to understand the finances.
Totally.
when starting out as an entrepreneur, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs fail because they don't understand cash flow at all.
Yeah.
And they spend way too much and they rely on investments in order to keep the business going until there's no more investments. And then they go out of business, right? Which is prevalent. So coming out of that rejection, explain to the Seven Hatters what your product is, because we're going to talk about your business, but let's talk about what your product is first, set a stage for it, and what it takes to actually create a product like yours, manufacturing a product like yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So we make espresso martinis in a can. We have two flavors, our skinny espresso martini, which is our original flavor. That one is zero sugar, zero carbs, no artificial sweeteners. And our angle with that one was very much like, for coffee people, it's a half a cup of coffee is worth of caffeine, really high quality coffee, really high quality alcohol, with none of the additives. And people really loved it. Our newest product is our vanilla espresso martini. That came out right before Labor Day. And people have been obsessed with it. If you're more of a latte style drinker, the idea was we wanted more latte style drinkers to have an option in our product portfolio. They've been obsessed with it. We use real sugar, real vodka, real coffee. And the flavor of this vanilla one, man, is just, it's out of this world. I mean, I usually drink black coffee, but vanilla's, you know, I'm kind of honeymooning with vanilla right now because it is so new and I'm having an amazing time trying it. But yeah, so those, that's the product themselves. The actual supply chain for our product is really, really challenging because of the coffee component. So you'll notice there are some other espresso martinis in the market. So why do we dominate? Why do we beat everyone else wherever we're on shelves with them? The reason is product quality and the reason, and more specifically, product taste. A lot of the espresso martini companies are pumping up their ABV, these crazy levels, 12, 14%, not because their customers want to. And if, look, if your customers did want to go there, there's a way to get it taste good there. But not because they're not doing it because their customers want to. They're doing it because they don't have access to actually make the product shelf stable, and they're pumping up ABV to circumvent the right way to do the supply chain. Now, without, you know, divulging too much of how our supply chain actually operates, I'll leave it really simply. Most people can't create our product because our product, because most alcohol brands want to be shelf stable so that they can economically distribute their product and get it on shelves and do all that stuff. If you pump up that ABV, you can make it shelf stable.
So hold on. So for those who don't know what ABV is, what's ABV?
Right. My bad. Alcohol by volume. So we're 5.7% ABV. A beer is typically like 4 to 6%. So our ABV level is in line with like a stronger beer. White Claw is like 5%. High Noon is like 5%. We're at 5.7%, which we felt like was that right amount where it gives you that nice feeling of the buzz from the alcohol. Half a cup of coffee is worth of caffeine. So it's really not crazy on either front. It's a very sessionable product. But really the problem with going 12% ABV is that these products have a real bite to them. So you're going to try an espresso martini at 12% and you take a sip and you're like, whoa, that's either a lot of alcohol or they pour a ton of sugar in it to offset the flavor of that alcohol, which again throws the quality of the product off.
So now that we know about your company, now we know about your product, that will give us a good foundation about the next few topics that we're going to discuss. Running a business, for anyone that runs a business, it's just mentally exhausting. It's seven days a week, basically, 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that I've had to learn over the last few years and really kind of master for myself. How do you take care of yourself during these tough times in terms of self-love, mental acuity, being able to show up for others?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good and really important question, and something that I did not prioritize at the beginning. And I realized I was much better at my job, much better in my role, if I did prioritize taking care of myself. It's funny because I had a friend from banking recently tell me, he was like, oh, you went, like, it's so cool, you get to control your own hours. I was like, no. We just went from doing 14-hour days to now I'm 24/7. But the things that I prioritize that make the most sense to me is I really prioritize sleep. And that was so not me. If you would have told me that before Beaumont that I'd be prioritizing sleep, I would have been like, you're insane. I am relentless about making sure that I'm getting a right 8 hours per night because it's actually very, very high return. I promise you it's very, very high return. Will there be nights where you need to pull all-nighters? Absolutely. There will be those nights. But on a regular night, you don't need to do that extra hour of work at the cost of getting that 8 hours of sleep. In my opinion, it's higher return to get that extra hour. The second part is I definitely take fitness very seriously. I work out every day. I think it's a really good physical way for like sometimes if you're really stressed about something and you get a workout and you're like, oh, this thing actually isn't that stressful, it's very solvable. The anxiety that I was feeling, I was able to physically get out of my body, and now I can really focus on how to solve that solution. I am a big believer in meditation. I meditate every day. That looks like something different. If you ask 10 people, you'll get 10 different responses. And honestly, one of the reasons that, and I said this in my wedding speech to my wife too, is like, one of the reasons I stay sane is like, my wife is the most calm, chill person ever. Like, I really do feel relaxed when I'm around her, which is a trait I didn't even know I was looking at for a partner, but it's something where it's like, if I get home and I even see her, I'm like, oh, everything is chill. Like, I'm good. And that puts me in a much more ready headspace to go to war every day, to figure things out that need to be figured out. I'm a much more effective and hardworking person if you do take those times to like really take care of yourself. And I can't stress that hard enough. And again, if you would have told me that a couple of years ago, I would have thought you're crazy.
Speaking about your wife, so let's follow that conversation. So your relationship with your girlfriend, now wife, obviously played a big role in supporting your journey, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the support, because I know I would not be able to be where I am right now without Ala. There's just no way, because the support that she gives me every single day, and also the support to start PromoMash after failing a business, being in $1 million worth of debt, losing her 25-year condo, all of the shit that we went through, and then still saying yes and supporting me through PromoMash was an incredible feat. And I know that not every entrepreneur has support. So tell me a little bit about this support system and how that affects you, but also it's not just about business. So how do you keep that balance between work and personal so that you still have a relationship and not just a kind of a working relationship?
Totally. And answering the second question first is like, I think like anything else you care about, you have to prioritize things in your life and really invest in the things that you prioritize. So to me, like, we do a date night every week. We do dinner together every night. We have like a good like 30 minutes before bed too, where we're just like relaxing, just like totally unplugged. Don't look at your phone. Don't look at your computer. Unless there's like an absolute emergency, you can really afford that. And then one night a week, like really taking that night to just like have a proper date night, talk about everything, and just like really make sure that every day that goes by, in the same way that I'm thankful for my parents to coming to this country, expressing to my wife how thankful I am to have her in my life, have her as my partner in my life. And what support looks like, again, I think if you ask 10 people, they'll ask for 10 different things. My personality is I'm very, very high energy. I'm super down to go super hard and do everything a million miles an hour. And she's very peaceful as a person. You know what I mean? So I think having that just natural, it's a very like organic feeling when I'm around her that I do feel like, okay, much more at ease. And sometimes to paraphrase David Ogilvy here, you're able to solve the problems that you've been hitting your head against a wall to be able to solve by picking up the phone from your unconscious, as he says. Sometimes you put all this information on your brain, but if you think too much about it, you get almost like a knot. Your thoughts are tied up in a knot. If you take your foot off the gas and you really exhale for a second, as David Ogilvy said, you answer the phone from your unconscious, and there was the answer all along. So I think having someone in your life, especially for a personality like mine, I need to have someone who is like that level of peaceful. Just their like very presence is relieving to me. But also one of the stories, again, I also told the story at our wedding. One of the stories that will always stand out to me. We were going to Las Vegas to visit one of our friends. And one of our friends reaches out and says, hey, this really big name DJ is having a party. You can go get Bomani in front of everyone. He's not going to charge you. He likes your product. Amazing, right? So we call the hotel. We're like, can we get some ice? And they let us know, hey, by the way, this isn't the party that's happening tonight. The party bus is leaving in 15. So she's wearing a black dress and heels, and I'm carrying all the Bomani in my arms. And I was like, oh my God, where are we going to get ice? We don't have enough ice to get all this stuff cold. She went and got a trash bag and loaded up like in the hotel ice machine, loaded up the trash bag and threw it over her shoulder like Santa Claus. I have a picture of us in that elevator. And I'm like, okay, this is real support. This is real support. She's in heels and a dress, carrying a full bag of ice just so we can go advertise our product to a new group of people.
You got to send me that photo. I'll put it on LinkedIn.
I will.
With this clip.
Yeah.
I love that. So you have your support from your wife. You have the support from your family. What about mentors? How are mentors and advisors responsible or at least contribute to your success?
Yeah.
Especially with Bomani, not just personal. Because there's advisors and there's mentors that will personally help you become a better CEO, a better person, but also help shape Bomani. Tell us a little bit about some of the encounters that you had with those.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I literally talk to my mom every day and get feedback from her. I always joke that if someone else were to sit on our calls, they might think that she's really mad at me. But in reality, I love that level of feedback that she's getting. She's going to be my biggest critic because she is my biggest fan. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I mean. And having someone like her who has built something up into, you know, astronomical levels of success, give me that constant feedback is amazing to have as a mentor. We do have an advisory board and they are amazing. I can't tell you enough. You know, recently we've been building into, we've had a project where one of our advisors has a lot of experience and I've spoken to him every day. This is a guy who has a, you know, phenomenally successful business. Like, to get him on the phone for most people is a multi-weeks waiting, go through assistant, whatever. And him taking the time to just pick up the phone whenever I call him and ask him these 30-second, 1-minute long questions is beyond the value that I can articulate. So one of the things we actually did very early on, we each made a list of the 20 most successful people we knew. And there was three of us at the time. So we had 60 people. And we made a list of 30 questions. And the goal was ask all 60 people the same 30 questions and then go through it and kind of look for patterns. If you hear something from one mentor, maybe that's one opinion. If you hear from two or three on the same situation, you're like, oh, there's really something here that I'm not picking up on for whatever reason. So I think asking for more feedback, ask for help, ask for advice as much as you can, and just hear what people have to say. I think you'll notice that there are a lot more, especially if there's something there's a lot more repetition in, a lot more people are saying kind of the same thing about a situation, there might be something there.
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting. I don't know if you can recall this. I'm sure you can. The worst day you've had since you started Bomani, okay, right? And how did one of your mentors or your mom, how did they get you through it?
Yeah.
What was that about?
I'm trying to think about, because we had a couple of days where I'm like, oof, that was a tough one. You know what I mean? I think first and foremost, it's the co-founders that have to come to your rescue, because at the end of the day, you know, our advisors or our mentors or my mom or anything, like, they've made it in their lives. We haven't. You know what I mean? So there's like, yeah, that little piece of, you need to first go to your co-founders, in my opinion. If there's a really tough day, hash it out with them, figure out what, get to the bottom of it. But I would say in one situation that really comes to mind, which we don't have to get into specifics about, but it was, I guess, like at a very high level, basically we realized that our customers were not able to find Bomani. And that sucked. That was really, really hard when we had that realization. We started putting feelers out there to say what's going on. And our customers were DMing us and reaching out to us and saying, hey, I went to my local Whole Foods or my local Ralph's or my local BevMo where I usually buy your product and it wasn't on shelves. I have a birthday party this weekend. Like, how come you guys have been sold out all week? And we're like, we're not sold out. You know, what are they talking about? We'd go to the store, we'd find that ourselves. Come to find out, every time that the retailers were doing a reset, which they do a couple times a year, and they moved the product, people weren't finding it. Our old 4-packs were really good looking, but they were sleek black. And that was really, really hard to swallow, especially as a young entrepreneur, because you have all this pride that this thing looks beautiful. Guess what? It can look beautiful all day, but if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, it doesn't make a sound. So we had this really important moment where we were like, okay, we have to fundamentally change our packaging. And to quote a guy who's become a friend of mine, James Richardson, who wrote Ramping Your Brand, if you haven't read it and you're in our industry, absolutely should read it.
I know James very well. I have a bunch of his books that I give away at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great guy. We've had him on ProMash on a webinar. So yeah, go ahead.
Stud. And yeah, one of the things he says in his book was like, if you're going to iterate with a big mallet. Like, don't make sudden tweaks. And that's what we kind of said. Like, you know, our old 4-pack was sleek black. It said alcohol infused coffee. Like, it was a different identifier for the product itself. So the first thing we did was like, all right, smash it with a big mallet. Let's make these edits. That's where we had the first iteration of our disco ball packaging, which now has been super successful. And our first iteration of the disco ball packaging said cold brew coffee cocktail. And over time, that was like a big, okay, the momentum shifted and we started growing faster. But the biggest growth moment that actually happened this year was when one of my co-founders, Amin, was at a bar and he overheard this girl ordering Bomani for her friend. And she said, hey, have you had Bomani yet? Her friend goes, no, what's that? She goes, it's a skinny espresso martini. And we're like, wait, are people calling it that? Come to find out, her and her friends, the girls who did know about Bomani at this bar, were calling it skinny espresso martini. That led us, because now we'd ripped the bandit off. We'd thrown all the ego out the door and said, forget what we care about. Whatever, dude. We'd like the sleek back packaging, but our customers didn't, they couldn't find it, and they can find this new packaging with a disco ball. Instead of saying cold brew coffee cocktail, let's reflect what they actually say and see how it actually works on shelves. Our goal was to increase, like it was like 20% over 12 weeks. Within 4 weeks, we had increased 257%. And within 6 weeks, we were up 473%. Look, almost selling $6 to every $1 we were selling before. Just absolutely blew it out of the water. And that really blew the doors open for all of our growth because of the Skinny Espresso Martini nickname, identifier, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that first moment of realizing our packaging wasn't working was one of the moments I always think back to is like, that was really a really, really hard pill to swallow. But I think our advisors got us through it by telling us not to be babies. You're telling, you know, you like throw your ego out the window. No one really cares what you think. You made a great product, but if your customers can't find it, it doesn't matter. No one, if the people can't find it, it's a repeat purchase. You can be damn sure that people are not going to find it for the first trial. So, and that was one of those ones where it was a little bit of tough love that was very helpful.
Anytime you put skinny on anything, it's going to sell. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I remember wasn't there an alcohol drink called Skinny Girl?
Oh, in the margarita space? I think
the margarita space.
Skinny Girl, right? Though. Yeah.
Skinny Girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. But I guess like you can order a skinny margarita. It's not a Skinny Girl margarita too, though. You know what I mean? Like skinny just kind of, I think skinny is just nickname for zero skinny. Sugar or low sugar. Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, I think that was a brilliant move on your part, but you had a few brilliant moves. You and I started working together with PromoMash back in 2020. That's how we found each other. Yeah. And we were helping you manage your demos, right? Back when you were all wearing masks and you couldn't pour or the drink. Tell us, I think it was a masterclass in promotion, because, you know, I'm all about promotion, PromoMash, it's all about trade spend. Mm-hmm. But I think what you had a masterclass in field sampling.
Thank you.
Especially with the education and you creating little videos with your mask on and pretending. And tell us a little bit about how you created it and what was the result and what that taught you on promoting a CPG product, because that's the biggest hurdle for every CPG brand is getting found and understood by your shopper, right?
Absolutely. And PromoMash is an amazing tool because you can literally track how your demos are doing. So when you go out and do that trial and error with how you're training people, how you're looking at the videos, how people are actually adapting what you're training into real life and just see it in the numbers. You can go check in the numbers and say, okay. And, you know, we track categories 1 through 4. Category 1 is someone who ignores you entirely. Category 2 is someone who tastes the product, or back in the days of a dry demo, is someone who stops at the table and does talk to you. Category 3 is someone who buys a 4-pack. Category 4 is someone who buys more than one 4-pack. So 2, 3, 4, whatever it may be. And what we kind of realized earlier on was like, okay, we were doing the trial and error ourselves. We were saying, what do people care most about this product? And we've learned pretty early on, they loved the flavor. Then after they loved the flavor, they loved the nutrition label, but maybe more than anything, they loved the function. Like the fact that Bomani plays a role, it's part of your routine, it's part of your ritual, right? It's that perfect first drink, that nice little pick-me-up, because there is half a cup of coffee's worth of caffeine to give you that nice little pick-me-up as your first drink of the night. So the first step was, like you talked about, imitating what we had seen in stores and acting it out. Maybe we're not the best actors in the world, but it was actually almost funny that we weren't, right? But we were doing these real interactions that you'd see in the stores. And we would post those videos on PromoMash for our brand ambassadors to come check out, because they were like, oh, I've seen that. I've had this interaction. We ran through FAQs. We have a lot more FAQs for our product than you might if you're a beer or a seltzer or tequila or whatever, because our whole category was new. Our whole category is new. So we're going to get a lot more questions around the product, and our brand ambassadors had to be that next level of extremely, extremely well-trained so that they're qualified to be answering those questions. So I'll say what we did was first the trial by ourselves, boil that down to a couple key points, articulate those all to the brand ambassadors, and then have regular conversations with the brand ambassadors to see what they're hearing in the field. That actually, on this note, is exactly why we started Vanilla, why we launched Vanilla. It was because, if you remember, one of the upload questions we had to PromoMash was, we said, hey, when you're pouring Bomani, take note of how many people like their product, like their Bomani with vanilla. Come to find out, and you remember, we had actually an older vanilla flavor that was just a vanilla espresso martini that had that, or basically skinny vanilla espresso martini that had no sugar, no carbs in it either, but had a vanilla like top note to it. And we learned that overwhelming majority, 85% of those people who were buying the old vanilla product were buying it with oat milk. So the one hand is like, wait, why are we making our customers do it? Let's do it for them. And then the other hand was how many people are not repurchasing because they want the oat milk in there? Or how many people are not purchasing in the first place because they wanted a vanilla to have oat milk in it? Because if you go to Starbucks, there is no really vanilla black coffee. It's vanilla latte style coffee. So the vanilla espresso martini is much more latte style, uses real sugar, uses real oat milk, real vodka, real coffee, all that good stuff. But the reason that we discovered that product would even be important to create is because we deployed our brand ambassadors to ask those questions in the field of our real customers.
So learning from the brand ambassadors, and obviously you have two distinct areas in CPG. You have on-premise and off-premise. Mm-hmm. So you have the bars, right? And then you have the retail stores. Was the biggest financial risk that you've taken the packaging change, or was it determining which area to focus on initially, or was it your brand ambassador program? Like, what was your biggest financial risk where everything was online, and if it didn't work out, you would probably be over? And how did you manage that stress during that time period?
Yeah, I would say the biggest financial risk far and beyond was the actual of the setting up of the supply chain. There were a lot of hurdles to come across. There was equipment, specific people we needed. It was an extremely, extremely, in hindsight, high risk and expensive endeavor. Managing stress during that period, I think, I mean, to paraphrase Jeff Bezos here, he has what he calls the regret minimization framework. Whereas he basically says, if you don't do it when you're 85 years old or you're 100 years old and you're laying on your deathbed, what are you gonna be thinking about? Like, you're gonna be thinking about the things you didn't try. So it's like, we have this idea, we're passionate about it, we're bringing the product to our friends and they're loving it. We have to build a supply chain and see if this can be a real thing, right? So to us, it was like, we'd regret more not doing it than doing it.
Yeah. What legacy do you hope to leave behind, both with Bomani and in your personal life?
Yeah, I think they're one and the same. It's like, work towards whatever you want, work towards your purpose, but still have a good time. Like, our name Bomani actually comes from a Farsi word, Bomani, which means to have purpose. The whole idea is like, work as hard as you want. Our job is to make sure that you can still enjoy your social life. So it's, I guess, that simple.
And tell me a little bit about the relationship you have now with, you know, you have two co-founders, but you also have another fourth partner.
Totally.
What is that like? How did that evolve over time? And where are you now? How are you heading into the next evolution or the next phase of Bomani?
Yeah, I mean, I love them. I consider them my brothers. You know what I mean? Like, they were three of my groomsmen at my wedding. We're Dustin, Kai, and me. You know what I mean? Dustin nailed the dance, by the way. We did a traditional Indian wedding with all the Persian parts as well. We did the Indian dance. I got to send you the video of that too.
Was that a 2-week wedding?
It was definitely a multiple day wedding. But yeah, the relationship is amazing, man. I mean, there's a lot of, I think, investment into that relationship. We've taken a lot of care to give ourselves real hard feedback. We give ourselves very frequent feedback. But I think the most important thing of all of it is like true and genuine ego death. There's a certain amount of, I mean, even call it arrogance, you have to have to start a business. Like, oh, I can figure this out, but Anheuser-Busch can't. Like, that's an arrogant thing to think, right? But if you're starting a business in our category, you naturally have to think that. But as you grow and you really realize, you know, the business has to outgrow me as a person. It has to be much bigger than me. You know, it has to be much bigger than any one person. And the sum of the whole has to be much greater than the sum of the parts. So having to be like, hey, look, I know I screwed up on X, Y, and Z. And Kai can call me anytime and say, hey, by the way, I think you X would have been better if you had done this other way. And I can be like, oh, that's a good point. Or like, you know what? I appreciate that feedback, but I'm not sure that would have been the case. Either way is fine. Being able to give that feedback, being able to put your own ego to the side for the greater good of the business, I think is the most important thing we've learned. And all the other lessons, you know, kind of follow that. Like, give people real responsibilities. Let people take measured risks. Measure those risks. And disagree and commit. If someone who leads a business unit wants to do something, you have to let them pursue that idea and take a risk on it. But then at the end of the day, you can't say told you so if it didn't work. Because if you let them lead that business unit, it is your responsibility. It is your buy-in that you need to have. It's the same analogy of like, if we're driving in a car and the leader of the business unit is in the driver's seat, and say it's retail, which Kai leads, and he's in the driver's seat. And I'm like, oh, do you want to go this way or that way? And he's like, you know what? I want to go this way. Me reaching over and grabbing the steering wheel and trying to go this way is going to cause an accident. You need to buy into that direction at the discretion of the leader of that business unit.
Wow. So what's the future of Bomani? Where do you want to go in the next 5 years? Is there new product launches? Is this a play to cash out and sell to Anheuser-Busch? Is it like, what's the roadmap over the next few years?
It's actually very, very simple. We want to be synonymous with caffeinated cocktails. So in the same way that I would say like, oh, don't hand me a tissue, hand me a Kleenex. Don't call me a car, call me an Uber. We want to own that level of brand synonymity with caffeinated cocktails. And that's the direction that we're going to head in. What that means is we're going to own it for all the places where people are enjoying espresso martinis or other caffeinated cocktails. That's the concert venues, maybe picking one up with a pregame for your friends. We want our customers to know that we created this product. We put in all this work and all these dollars and all this investment in this supply chain to create something that they can genuinely enjoy with really high quality ingredients that gives you that little pick-me-up of caffeine with 5.7% alcohol.
So that's a great vision. What's the biggest roadblock that you got right now to get there?
The biggest roadblock between now and then is simply put, it's education. A lot of people don't even know that we exist. Our repeat purchase is very high when people actually do get to try the product, but a lot of people don't even know that we exist. So it's about being a part of events in a very authentic way. It's not about paying a celebrity to go on some commercial and say, hey, by the way, buy Bomani. It comes off as very inauthentic. We want to really authentically prove to our customers why they should give Bomani a shot and kind of let the product do the talking from there.
Have you tried influencers? Did that work for you?
Yeah. Influencers are great if they actually like the product. You know what I mean? Like a lot of, you know, we had some pretty big names post, but we've also had people who have like 100,000, 200,000 followers hit us up and be like, hey, by the way, it's my bachelorette party this weekend. Can you hook it up with some product? I'm like, dude, absolutely. I'll go drop some off for them myself. And like, they post a lot about it, but it's more about having those authentic influencers posting about in authentic ways, building that real community around Bomani, what we call the Bomani click, is much more effective in our experience versus doing the paid posts that are like, Bomani is delicious, #ad, you know?
Yeah. You guys, the four of you have really everything, especially the energy and the zest. You guys are young. That it takes, right, to succeed. And we're all rooting for you. We really are.
Thank you so much.
The brand since day one, I knew it was special. I promoted it as much as I could promote it. I was one of those guys that couldn't find your product. Actually, it wasn't in the store. And then when it was in the store, I couldn't find it in the store. So I took the ride and the journey with you. And thank you for being a loyal client of From a Mash, but also a friend. So, and thank you for educating us on the product and your company. I'd like to close out my interviews with the following question. Who did you have to stop being, and who did you need to become to manifest your current success?
Who did I have to stop being? Who did I have to become? Mm-hmm. I had to stop being just a player on the court and more of a player coach. And I think the distinction there is like, rather than just trying to do everything yourself, rather than just being like, oh, I can figure this out. It's no big deal. I can just do this and do that and do that and next thing. It's much more important as a company grows to be a player coach, which is doing things obviously with getting your own hands dirty when you need to, but also giving people real responsibility to run their business unit and coaching on making sure that they're staying true to the greater vision of Bomani, that they're not wasting time on doing projects. Kind of like being a strategic third party to a lot of the business units gives you that, oh, I can see the forest rather than lose it for the trees. So I had to stop being a player on the court and much more of a player coach.
And I think that's such a wise nugget for so many entrepreneurs. I'm still trying to figure that out myself.
Aren't we
all?
You
can't scale. Yeah, you can't scale yourself. You need to be part of a larger team, and you need to let go. So tell the Seven Hatters where they can find you, how to connect with you. What are you up to? What do you want them to know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can find Bomani just at drinkbomani.com. That's BOMANI.com. Our Instagram is @drinkbomani. And our Instagram is actually really funny. We have an amazing creative director who my personal favorite video we posted recently. I won't spoil it, but it's me in a beard net and a hair net. It's one of the most creative content pieces I've ever seen. So do check it out if you have a minute. But those are the ways to stay in touch with Bomani. Me personally, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. My last name is Madani. That's M-A-D-A-N-I. And my first name obviously is Sam. So we stay in touch that way as well.
I will put all your contact info in the show notes. Sam, it was such a pleasure having you on the show. I've been wanting to for a while. You're an inspiration. You're incredible. And I can't wait to see what you have coming in store for us. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, man. Like the support from day one has meant the world to us, and we are just getting started. So we're excited to do to build.
I love it. And congratulations again on your wedding.
Hey, thank
probably
you.
Probably going to see some children soon. Some little
Bhamanis. Hey, whoa, you sound like my parents all of a sudden.
Well, they called me. They told me to tell you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sam. Let's end today with the show segment that I refer to as What Can We Hang Our Head On? And here is my takeaway. As I listened to Sam's story, it struck me on how his life's journey mirrored many of our seven hats, which is rare for a young entrepreneur like him. So many entrepreneurs come out swinging, grinding, believing that their business is all that matters. They fall prey to working 100 plus hour weeks, focusing on no other part of their lives until they burn out. Ask me how I know. Well, that was me 14 years ago with my first business. What caught my attention, and what I relate to so much, is Sam's profound connection to his roots and his family legacy. He carries with him the resilience and courage of his parents, who fled Iran and then instilled in him a deep sense of purpose and identity. It's a powerful reminder that immigrants often have a higher success rate in business because they don't take what their parents and grandparents went through to provide them with opportunities for granted. We can learn a valuable lesson here. Understanding and loving ourselves, embracing our history and values, is the foundation upon which we build everything else. We set the stage for authentic growth when we honor who we truly are. Focus on a winning mindset and learn to love ourselves. This empowers us to navigate life's journey with confidence and grace, aligning with hat number one, which is all about self-love and mindset. Then, Sam touches on hat number two, the athlete, where he emphasizes a non-negotiable importance of sleep, fitness, and meditation in his life. Not as afterthoughts, but as essential pillars that support his daily performance. It's a lesson for all of us. Our physical well-being isn't just about health. It's about equipping ourselves with the vitality and clarity needed to chase our dreams. When we prioritize our bodies, we invest in our capacity to achieve. It took me a while to learn this truth, but in the end, if you don't take care of your mind-body connection, it doesn't matter how successful your business is. $1 billion won't mean much when you're sick. As they say, a healthy man has 1,000 dreams, but a sick man only one. One of the most impactful segments was when Sam and I discussed hat number three, the servant, about our relationships with others. The way Sam speaks about his wife is truly heartwarming. She provides balance, peace, and an unwavering support, a sanctuary amidst the storm of entrepreneurship. It highlights how critical our relationships are in this journey. We aren't meant to go at it alone. The love and support of those close to us uplift us and ground us, reminding us of what truly matters. This interconnectedness is a source of strength and comfort, making our journey more meaningful and fulfilling. But perhaps the most profound takeaway is when I think of hat number seven, the seeker, the spiritual aspect in all of us. Beneath all the hustle of building a business, and it's a hustle for sure, there's a spiritual quest, a search for meaning beyond success. Sam isn't just building a company, he's honoring a legacy, fulfilling a purpose, and seeking growth on a deeper level. This spiritual dimension adds richness to the journey, transforming it from a mere pursuit of goals into a meaningful voyage of self-discovery. This quest for a deeper purpose inspires us to keep moving forward, even facing challenges. So, as we reflect on Sam's journey, the intertwining of these hats teaches us a valuable lesson. True fulfillment comes not from focusing on a single aspect of ourselves, but from harmoniously blending all parts of who we are. So ask yourself, are you nurturing your relationship with yourself? Are you embracing self-love and authenticity? Are you caring for your physical self, ensuring that you have the strength and energy to pursue your passions?
Are you investing in your relationships, allowing others to support and enrich your journey? Are you channeling your entrepreneurial spirit with courage and adaptability? Are you seeking a deeper purpose, a spiritual connection that adds meaning to your endeavors? In weaving these hats together, we don't just chase achievements. We cultivate a life of balance, depth, and true fulfillment. So, let's take a page from Sam's book and strive to wear all our hats with intention and grace. Remember that success isn't just about what we accomplish, but who we become along the way. I want to thank Sam once again for joining me so that we can benefit from his wisdom. And until next time, if you found this episode helpful, please hit that subscribe button and tell other entrepreneurs out there what value you received from it so that we can attract even more high-quality people into our Seven Hats community. So for now, I will bid you farewell and success on your journey. And until next time, my name is Yuval Selick, and I tip my hat to you.